This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by North Dakota Tourism, Federal Premium Ammunition, Onyx Hunt, Chief Upland, and by Huron, South Dakota. Today's episode is one that we never wanted to do, at least not for several years. But cancer kills, and that's a reality that we can't change. Scott Franzen joins me today to say goodbye to Hank, his beloved Labrador Retriever.
The Flush. So fast, it hardly seems real. So vivid, the moment freezes in time before erupting in a blur of spurs and feathers. It's why we changed the way upland loads are built with Prairie Storm. Exclusive flight control FlexWad technology and a mix of copper-plated lead and flight stopper pellets combine to create dense, deadly shot strains through any choke. Longer shots, more power, fewer missed birds. Only from Federal.
Hey, upland hunters. If you're looking for a place to chase roosters this fall, you need to check out Huron, South Dakota. Here's why. The access to public hunting land is awesome. They have plenty of pet-friendly hotels for the hardest-working member of your hunting group. In addition, Huron is hosting a couple great events this hunting season, the first weekend of November. The Ringneck Festival, a six-man competitive hunt, which draws hunters from all over the country, and the Bird Dog Challenge. It's the opportunity you and your dog have been waiting for, complete with food, prizes, camaraderie, and so much more. The South Dakota pheasant season opens October 16th, so plan your hunting trip to Huron, South Dakota today. Check out the website and learn more at huronsd.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host. Brandon Morton, as always, produces this program. Big thank you to Brandon for all of your hard work. I received a text yesterday afternoon from a friend of mine, Josh Bathke, saying that Team USA Shooting was watching the Flush on their flight to Tokyo, Japan. Let's hope that they shoot a whole lot better than Scott and I do in our shows. But big shout out to Team USA. Bring home the gold! Scott, you bring home the gold every time you join this podcast, so I expect nothing less from you today. Always an A. I wish we were talking about the upcoming hunting season today, and we can, but this season is going to look a little different for you than you expected. First off, how are you and your family doing?
Well, thank you. We're doing pretty well right now, all things considered. It was a rough 4th of July, rough weekend, but then, especially when you have a puppy around the house, it changes your perspective or takes your mind off of it. One thing that was nice about the 4th is we did have a lot of things planned already, and it could take our minds off of it, but there were a lot of tears that weekend from everybody, and just, you know, kind of when you don't expect it, and I know everybody's that listens to this podcast has lost a dog at some time, probably. It's the small things you don't think about. The coming down the stairs in the morning and the greeting, the playing with the puppy. Hank loved to play with the puppy and things like that. But we're doing well.
Yeah,
about as well as we can be doing, Trav.
Well, if somebody listening doesn't know, you just lost your dog Hank to cancer.
Yep, Hank was 5. He had, I think, 2 different kinds of very aggressive cancers. It was a complete shock to us. I've never had to put down a dog in his prime before. I hope I never have to do it again. Putting down your dog is always hard. But when they age, and I think we talked about this, you're able to transition and kind of age with them. And so if they're 11, 12, 13, or older, you know that day's coming and you're able to kind of prepare for it. When they're 3, 4, or 5, it's unexpected, you're unprepared, it's nothing you ever dreamed about when you're owning your dog. And so that was really hard. You know, to think of, it was fast. He was a happy Labrador Retriever running around Memorial Weekend, and on July 2nd, we said goodbye.
I remember just thinking about you and your family a lot over that time period, because we kind of kept in touch and you were letting me know. You just noticed some things were different in Hank leading up to it. Can you take us back about, I want to say, 3 or 4 weeks prior to that day when you started to notice Hank's behavior changing? What were you seeing?
Well, the first sign was a change in his eating habits. And with particularly labs, people that own labs, you know they love to eat. and he would, especially in the morning, he would not eat his food the same way. Sometimes he would eat half of it and leave it there, then maybe circle back an hour later and finish it. Sometimes he wouldn't eat much at all and circle back later and eat it, but that was a change. And at first it wasn't, we just thought, okay, he's interested in the puppy. But I did take notice and it's gradually changed. And so initially I was wondering if he had something going on in his mouth, a broken tooth, something in his throat, something that was, because it was, he would generally eat his food once it had softened. And, so I took him into the vet for that, and there was nothing wrong with his food. We thought maybe he was just getting bored with his dog food, so we tried a probiotic. That worked well for a few days, and then it started changing again. And my vet and I had discussed if the probiotic wasn't the ticket, then next step would be to draw blood. So we did that, ran tests. His initial tests on some of his cancer indicators were normal. Liver enzymes, white blood cell counts were in the normal range, but he did spike something that appeared to be a tick-borne disease. And that was probably 2 weeks into it. So we got confirmation on that. We started treating it aggressively with antibiotics, changed up Hank's food. He seemed to be eating normally again, adding back in, it was a canned food. We started adding back in his kibble. But then after about 3 days, that would change too. And his eating habits were the biggest indicator. And then the other one was drinking. He would drink a lot of water. He would drink water out of the bowl, almost like I've seen him drink before. I never had seen him drink like this. We have a swimming pool. He'd find a way to get down to the swimming pool, and he'd jump in and want to drink out of the swimming pool. So that was leading up to about the week before he died. We were on a trip out west, and his eating, we were just trying to get him to eat something, and we thought maybe it was his stomach was upset from the antibiotics. So we tried pulling them away. We did kind of hamburger and rice, and all the things we'd try, he'd eat for a day and a half, and we spaced out feedings, et cetera. And then it would kind of change, and the drinking kept getting more and more and more. And then we noticed changes in his sleeping habits. He was more restless at night. We'd find him, I think I told you this, in the morning laying in the shower, like that was a comfortable for him. And so we came home early from our trip. My vet was in touch with me the whole time. He was a godsend, and got him in the Wednesday before the 4th of July for more blood tests, because the holiday weekend was coming and we wanted to know what was going on and try and treat it. And those blood tests came back with elevated liver enzymes, elevated white blood cell counts. So it was apparent that he was fighting something. And the other thing I took a step back is through this period, his energy level changed a little bit. It was very subtle and gradual until the end. But then he would have periods where it's like, oh, Hank's, he's 90% back, so maybe we're on the right track here. And but then he would be, in, you know, when you're, you know, anytime the dummy came out, I don't think anyone other than me would have known that he was not feeling quite right. Yeah. Where it became more apparent is we'd go on walks and he wouldn't, he'd trot versus hunt, like, you know, and you've been with him. Hank's a rangy lab. He has a gait that cruises, you know, almost like a, you know, not quite like a pointer, but he likes to explore, and he would, he was happy to be on the walk, but he was just trotting. And so it was those things that made me, I was kind of concerned about 2 weeks into this that it was more than just a tick-borne disease. Anyway, so the bloods came back indicating that something else was going on. And then we did an MRI, and that kind of confirmed that it was a cancer, a couple of cancers.
When you got those results back, what was that like for you and your family?
Well, I kind of knew it was coming because the radiologist had gotten the Hank's x-rays from my vet, and I got a copy of their report, and that indicated some bad things. And my vet tried to call me down saying they're covering all bases with that, and that's why we're doing the MRI to confirm. But I was already suspecting, based on what the blood work results were, what the radiologist had said, that it was coming. And it was hell. I mean, it was I just can't imagine, you know, I heard that regarding my dog and it was terrible. I can't imagine those poor people that have to go through that with a loved one, a family member or something, when they hear that. And so we called the girls and they came home. Hannah, my youngest, was working, so she was the first to know. Maddie called after work to check in. They all knew Hank was getting tests. We told her what was going on and that she might want to come home, and she did. And then Grace, my oldest, came home the last, and so she was the last to know. But everybody came home. We got to spend a really good night with him, and a good morning. And then said goodbye.
You said it, you know, for somebody that has to experience that with a child, or, you know, and I know some friends and people that have experienced loss with kids, and my heart breaks.
Right.
My heart breaks. There's just something different about the timing of it versus, you know, somebody who's lived a long, full life where you can say it was expected and they mm-hmm. lived a good life. But it just feels like you've been robbed if it's too soon. And I feel like, I mean, I don't have the words, you know?
I don't either. And that was something, as much pain as we were feeling, as much pain as I know other people feel when they lose their pets, their dogs, and put them down, you try and put it in perspective. And we talked to the kids about that. And it helped us, you know, that, you know, we said a prayer for those people that are experiencing that, and counted our blessings that we haven't had to experience that with any of our family members, you know, and a loved one, knock on wood. And it does help you kind of keep a little bit of perspective. And that doesn't change how much you love your dog or things like that. But, you know, there's a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And I hope, you know, you've been open to talking about it, you know, and I hope that it's helpful to be able to talk through some of these things. But also, you know, today I wanted to, you know, celebrate Hank's life too, mm-hmm. because he lived a really good 5 years with you and your family, great family, and some of the places that he's been. We'll get into some of your favorite Hank memories. We've captured some on our TV show. We've had a lot of feedback about that. And then also, we've talked off air a little bit about this, but I think there's an opportunity in our show to have a special segment tribute to
to bird dogs
of the past.
I agree.
Because our listeners, we have dogs. Most likely, if you're listening to this show, you have a dog and have had a dog, and you've got some incredible memories. I think we can bring those back and we can celebrate those too. So we'll get into that shortly. But looking back on what you guys went through with Hank, and one thing that you when we kept talking about it, you had a really good relationship with your vet, you know, and he was there for you in a way that I think a lot of people want to have in a vet, right? How did you get that relationship with somebody that you can trust?
That's a really good question. His name is Jim Wood, Dr. Jim Wood. He was recommended to me from a parent of one of my girls' basketball teammates, and she's a hunter, and her husband's a hunter, and I wasn't completely satisfied with the veterinary clinic I was going to, it felt a little cold and a little too businesslike. And I get it's a business, but you know, we're just talking about the relationships people have with their pets, and you don't necessarily want it to feel like a business.
Right.
And she just spoke very highly of Jim and said, he's a bird hunter, and I think you'd really like him. I'll let him know you're going to call him, and we'll see where it goes. And so I called him, and I brought Izzy and Hank in there for their spring tune-ups, and the first hour we talked bird hunting.
That's my guy.
And then we got down to business, and I think it was, and Gene was in there with me, and I think it was an hour and a half appointment that should have been a half hour. But right then I knew, okay, this is going to be a little bit different. And the other thing about Jim, which is kind of funny, is he looks just like Michael Keaton. And he wears a ball cap, and you go, hey, that's Michael Keaton. This is my vet. So that started it. And I don't, all I want as a you know, patient for my dogs is no different than anyone else, just response. And I'm not expecting preferential treatment or anything like that, but if I call or text with, for instance, last year, Hank, after many, many days of hunting, I could tell he had an infection in his paw. I think I told you about this. I could see some swelling at night before we went to bed. The next morning, we woke up, and it was swollen. And so we pulled the pin on our hunts. I said, I'm going to get him home to the vet. So he said, you can text me anytime. So I took advantage of that and texted him, said, explain what was happening. He said, I'm bringing him home. Any chance I could get Hank in the next couple of days? He texts back, and this is during COVID, so you had to drop your dogs. I said, I can fit Hank in. Just drop him off when you're back in town. I'll take a look at it, and I'll text you when you can pick him up. And Hank had a cattail reed jammed up through his toenail bed, and he pulled it out, put him on antibiotics, and it was done. And it was no muss, no fuss, no drama. And that's kind of what I want. I want a vet that has a little bit of understanding of the relationship that hunters have with their dogs, but also isn't trying to sell you a Cadillac every time you go in,
right?
Type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yep. I learned right away too, what I needed out of a vet. And I've since, I've found my vet right now.
And we talked about that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you're out there in the field, you got to know, hey, can I just send you a message? Here's what I've got. My vet, the last time, I mean, I sewed Daisy up about a month and a half ago. I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast or not, but I sewed her up myself. And then
she looks like Frankenstein, by the way.
She was doing great, except I thought I was too far along, and I allowed her access to the wound, and then she licked it open. And then the second time is when I thought, dang it, I didn't give her enough time with the cone and the bandage on it. That's my fault. So I was concerned that the wound wouldn't heal properly a second time. So then I took her in, and my vet goes, come back here with me. I'm going to show you. And she walked me through everything about certain little things that I didn't know, and because she's a hunter too, she knows what I'm getting at. Daisy just stands there and takes it, you know. Whereas a different vet prior, you know, almost 8 months ago, my wife took her in when I was out of town. She put Daisy under for the smallest little work, and Daisy was not the same for, you know,
a couple days. Yeah,
because of it. And I'm like, why did they put her under? You can do anything because she's a bird dog. She's trained for that. You can rub her and touch any part of her body because we need to do that. Anyway, and then the other vet goes, why wouldn't you tell her she's a bird dog? She should have known, you know, some of those things where you get this comfort level, which I have now and which you have with Jim there too. When you were going through all of this stuff with Hank, you know, and you talked about this tick-borne disease, I think that's kind of something that's interesting for me. What stage do you think Hank picked that up? Is that what caused the cancer? Do you know what caused the cancer?
No, we don't. And so anything we talk about is pure speculation and guess. Jim, my vet, thought that this wasn't something he picked up this year. Hank's inoculated for Lyme's disease, and then he takes a medication, monthly medication for ticks and fleas. And I'm pretty good at remembering that, you know, for the most part.
Yep.
So his thought was this was something that, and you know, with and you're doing the same thing with Daisy right now. You pet your dogs all the time, and I generally feel any ticks that they get. So, and I never pulled a tick off of him this year, whatever. So he thought this is something he'd maybe had for a while. And there is a theory with some veterinary practices or veterinarians himself that many dogs that have tick-borne disease die of cancer for some reason. Could that have been a problem with Hank? Who knows? You know, who knows? He had a traumatic injury. I think I told you about right around Memorial weekend, playing with the puppy. They're having a blast in our backyard. He's running full speed all around and ran into a landscape boulder. And at first I thought maybe he'd blown out his leg and then that he could have broken something. He had what turned out to be a bone bruise. And could that have triggered something? Could the body have gone to fight that and then couldn't suppress
Stop
this
fighting
cancer?
The cancers.
Yeah, I don't know. You don't know. And you can drive yourself crazy asking why. I think Hank just drew a bad card. And from what I've seen, and I have to say the support that we got on the Flush Facebook page from people that either knew Hank, many didn't know Hank, was fantastic. And the amount of people that said they have experienced something similar to that with their hunting dog, I both felt terrible for him and then support, because you're not the only one who's had to be through. And I know I wasn't the only one that had to be through that, go through that. But unfortunately, it happens. And but that bird hunting community that we're a part of is unbelievable.
Very close.
Oh my gosh.
It's large, but it's at the same time small
and tight.
Very tight. And yeah, big thank you to everybody that reached out. I know you told me this, Scott, but you read all the messages, all the comments from everybody to your kids.
Our whole family. Actually, everybody was on their phones. We were sitting in the family room and we were taking turns reading them. And, you know, how everyone was touching. Some people knew that this is, you know, someone commented that this poor family is the third dog they buried in 5 years. And I didn't even think of that. And it's true. And one just said, oh, I just watched him in the Ode to Izzy. And you know, so it's touching that they actually watch the shows that I did. You know,
I can't believe people
don't
just
Frank.
Yeah, right. I can't believe people take the time to sit through all of that either.
Oh, but it's to feel support, and this is a valuable lesson for me too, whether, you know, it's a dog or even, you know, God forbid, a person, even if you're not real close to that, just to give support helps those in pain. And because it's much easier not to do it. Yeah. the path of least resistance just to think, oh, I'll talk to them later. I'm not sending a note. And that little effort it takes to drop a note on Facebook or send a written note or something means the world to people, meant the world to us. I know that.
Yeah. Something I don't remember if I read it or heard it, but a long time ago, somebody said, you never know what you say, how you say it, or what you're going through, what you're talking about, who's listening, when they hear it, when they might need to hear something that you're saying.
So true.
And it matters, you know, even on this show, the feedback that we've received from people, from some of our guests, you know, going through something, you just aren't alone, and you never know who's listening. So I make a point to, I've always carried that with me because it's so true.
It's very true.
It's so true. We're going to go back in time and celebrate some favorite Hank moments, but first I have a quick message from our presenting sponsors. For generations, bird hunters have hit the field carrying some form of a vest or game pouch on their backs. Sometimes the vests rip, tear, and fall apart. Other times, they're downright uncomfortable. That's why Chief Upland designed a vest that's durable, comfortable, and fits your needs. Their new Upland vest is fully customizable to fit the size and shape of all hunters. Plus, you decide where you want to attach your shell pouches and accessories. Last fall, I tested a Chief Upland vest for the first time, and I love it. Birds can be front-loaded into the game pouch, and they fit nicely in the back without sagging. That's a big deal because the weight disbursement on your back and shoulders won't tire you out even with a full pouch of birds. The vest itself is extremely lightweight, weighing only 2.56 pounds. The material is built out of Cordura fabric, which is the same waterproof fabric used in tactical military gear. You can confidently hunt with a Chief Upland vest in some of the world's toughest environments. I can say that my Chief Upland vest is one of the nicest hunting vests that I've ever worn. Push further and hunt longer with the game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit. If you're looking for a great bird hunting destination this season, then I strongly recommend that you consider one of my favorite places to hunt. That's North Dakota. North Dakota is a bird hunter's paradise. You can hunt both waterfowl and upland birds all in the same day. Ducks in the morning, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge in the afternoon, or vice versa. North Dakota has a population estimate of 2.9 million breeding ducks, which is 19% above the long-term average. And their prairie pothole region is smack dab in the middle of the central flyway. Last season, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge numbers rose in North Dakota. And there are reports coming out that some areas of the states have even higher numbers this year. I've been talking about the bird numbers in North Dakota for months now, and there's a chance this could be one of the best hunting seasons we've seen in decades. North Dakota has approximately 800,000 acres of private land open to public walk-in hunting. For the latest plots guide, visit the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com to start planning your hunting adventure today. Scott, do you remember Hank's first hunt?
I do.
I do too, because we we documented it. It was a family affair, we'll call it.
Definitely was that. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Looking back, you've got quite a few great hunts that you've spent with Hank. Do any of them stand out to you and why?
Oh, well, let me think about that, Travis. There is a couple. In Hank's, I think this was Hank's second year, maybe, in the place that this WPA in North Dakota, I love North Dakota too, where Izzy is buried and her dad, Gus, is buried. It's a place I hunt every year just because I have a ton of fond memories, and it usually holds some pheasants. And it was late season, cold, a little bit of snow, and I was hunting with another friend, and I had Hank and Izzy out. And at this point, Izzy's, I think she's 9 or 10, but she's still a really, really good upland dog. And the birds, we got into birds, and they were congregated in the cattails between kind of the switchgrass, which was now kind of bent down from the snow and the ice. So they couldn't go out on the ice because they'd expose themselves, and the ice was thick enough to walk on. And so we had a natural pinch point. And Hank probably put up on his own, 15, 20 roosters, not at once, you know, as we walked down this. And it was one of these things where he was scenting them outside of the cattails. He'd turn and look, go in, and a bird would pop up. And it was so much fun because then you'd shoot the birds on the ice and they'd, dogs would go get them. And I said to my friend Pete at the time, I said, my gosh, I think Hank just became the teacher. He went from the pupil to teacher right here. And to say that, because I think Izzy's been one of my best upland dogs, was something, because he dialed it in. He knew exactly what he was doing. And Izzy was in there with him, but he was a tick faster than her in getting in there and doing it. So that is one I will always remember. And the other one, I'll say this, on last year when we filmed in Wyoming, I was surprised, pleased, and just thought it was really cool to watch him dial in to species of birds that he'd never hunted before. When we were hunting those blue grouse, he flushed the first one that I shot, but the one I missed, and that's all on film. I said,
isn't it amazing how the camera always gets the wind?
Yeah, the one that I shot, it was just, you couldn't see it go down.
You turn back and you say, do you get it? They go, get what?
But I said to Aaron, I go, I think Hank's hot. Yeah, he's hot. And he is going up and down this mountain with his tail going, as, you know, when a dog's birdie, and he puts up this blue grouse and it flies right down a drainage in front of me, and I fanned. But I was astonished at how that clicked in so quickly. And then with the sharptails too, we've hunted sharptails before, but not in that type of terrain. And he just, you know, did phenomenal. He always had really strong retrieving instinct, but to see him switch species was pretty dang cool.
Yeah. Could you ever, looking back at your dogs, like, you don't want to, it's like your kids, you don't want to pick a favorite,
yeah,
but there's probably strengths that they each have that you'd be willing to say this one excelled here.
Yeah. It would be harder to do a dog individually. I will say, maybe by sexes. So I've had two males, two females, and Millie will be my third females. And I loved all my dogs and how they hunted. I think my males were a little more willing to go into the thick stuff on their own to check out what was there, where Izzy would, I'm thinking more of Izzy now, Izzy would definitely do it, but usually she was either following a scent or, you know, it was a birdie looking spot and I'm like, okay, you need to get in there type of thing. And you've hunted with Hank, and Gus was kind of this way too, they learn that the birds are in there, and he would just go in, and you wouldn't see them. You just kind of see where, especially in cattails, where they're moving, mm-hmm, and you had to be ready. It was kind of a fun way to hunt because all of a sudden, you know, a bird pops up.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest difference. But I think both my females, very much a coincidence, pointed, and pointed, like Izzy pointed hard.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if that's something. I don't think that's a sex thing. I just think it was a coincidence, but that's kind of a neat coincidence.
Least favorite Hank moment. We all have those favorite moments of.
Well, that was probably on Hank's first hunt because we started out hunting edges of sloughs and switchgrass and whatnot, and it was hot. It was really hot. And really hard for the dogs to scent. The birds could hear us, and it was hot, and it was like the first week in November too. And so we took a break. We got a few birds up, didn't really get any clean shots. we took a break to let it cool down, and then we went and hunted a Milo patch with grass around it so we could move around it. And we got into the Milo, and I lost Hank. He's gone, and that's on camera too. Actually, I don't think Graham used it, but I am screaming my brains out, whistling. You know, I think I'm trying to shock him, and I shoot a bird. Izzy gets it. I think I got another one, and then Hank appears out of the Milo nowhere. I'm like, God, Hank, my God. And so, it's usually around those first hunts that you experience some of the frustration, because I've been there.
Yeah,
By season two with Hank, we were really a good team. He still had Izzy, and Izzy really helped Hank a lot because she hunted very close and just turned naturally. And Hank learned that, but I could just give him a quick whistle with my tongue, and he'd turn. And he didn't give me much to get frustrated about afterwards. I'm sure there were times, but those were the biggest things in the first hunt.
Well, Graham decided not to use your missing dog segment. Aaron, on the other hand, chose to use mine. The show that's going to be airing, I believe, next week or the week after, is our North Dakota hunt, Daisy and I, in our first hunt. And I'll let you watch. You haven't watched it yet, Scott.
No, I've heard the story, though. I can hardly wait to see it on film.
Yeah, right. Everybody can. It's wonderful. She comes back, and she's... You're going to have to watch to find out for yourself. But every dog owner that hunts with their dog will be able to relate. Hopefully they laugh it off and don't give me too much flack.
You got to laugh it off.
You got to laugh it off.
Because yep. I have to believe the majority of us have been there one time or another with our hunting dog.
Yep, absolutely. What advice do you have for young dog owners that, God forbid, they never want to go through unexpected loss, but you've just gone through it. So can you offer some wisdom for people?
Well, I guess I'd go back to know that you're not the only one. Try and make sure you have the type of relationship with your vet that you value. And know, you know, Hank gave us a lifetime of memories in 5 years. And the pain is going to be really intense, at least it was for us, for a good week. But then you default to the memories and the things that make you happy. And if it's not the type of a loss that's with a car, you know, accident or something like that, but it's where your dog's ill and you have to play that role in making the decision, spend some quality time with him. If I could have, I would have taken Hank hunting. He wasn't so sick that he couldn't have rallied from that. I probably could have done it at a game farm, but they're, you know, the cover's so sparse right now. And to be honest, it was hot, and that was the only, if I had a regret, that was it. Otherwise, I would say, do something you love with them. So we took Hank for a boat ride. He loved going out in the boat. So we did a boat ride. We did a family walk the next day. He found a tennis ball. he always did, and we'll remember that.
Well, let's do an on-air production meeting, we'll call it.
All right, right now. I'm in.
And I think this is something that I've been pondering, I guess, to myself for a while, and then I mentioned it to you the other day. A way to celebrate Hank and the other bird dogs that are no longer with us, I think we could do... In every Flush podcast, we could do a tribute segment.
A call out.
Yeah. Yes. And so what I think we should do, if you like this idea, Brandon, you can chime in here as well if you want. But I think we could do our listeners, they can find us on our website. They can go to the website, on our Instagram page, on Facebook. Send us a message and a story about one of your dogs. It could be a great story, a terrible story, a story that you remember about your hunting dog, and we'll read it. We'll read one a week.
Do we want it to be a dog that's past or a dog that's currently?
But we'll remember the dogs that
celebrate the dogs from our past.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's,
I like that.
It's a celebration of dogs from our past. most people that have hunted have those stories that they hang on to, and we're gonna bring them back.
I love that.
I think it'll be a way for people to connect. Hopefully there's some great stories out there. I know there's great stories out there. Just told us a couple off the cuff without even really, I didn't prompt you or anything. You just have these memories. So please, if you're listening and you have a dog, tell us that your dog, how old they were when they passed. Tell us your favorite moment or memory or memories with the dog. And we'll pick one each week and we'll start reading them. And also, I think what we should do, let's come up with a name for this. It'll be a weekly part of the show, Hank's Tributes, or I don't know. I'm not sure what it...
Maybe the listeners can help us come up with a name for this segment.
Yep. So if you have a name for this segment, we want to know what the name should be. We'll keep it going. And then share with us stories.
I love that. I mean, it's a constant with bird hunters. It's really hard to be a bird hunter without having a dog.
It is.
And you might be a bird hunter that has a, maybe you don't have your dog currently, but you did have one. And we want to celebrate those. Mm-hmm. I think I told you this, and I can't do another ode show. I don't want to be sad anymore. Yeah. We want to celebrate Hank, celebrate the hunting dogs mm-hmm. of our fellow bird hunting people.
Well, and the community. I mean, look at how many people reached out to you, and they've been there, like you said. So we are a tight-knit community, the bird hunting community, and we want to keep it that way. And I think this is a great way to do it. So we hope you agree, and we hope you send in your stories about the bird dogs that you've loved and lost. And we're going to share them with everybody, and it's going to just hopefully spark more wonderful memories for the future.
So, I have one more with Hank. Can I share it?
Yeah, please.
I don't know if I've even told you this one. This was not last fall, the fall before. We were doing some waterfowl hunting and pheasant hunting. And
where were we at?
We were in North Dakota, and it was around the Oaks area, and it was cold, bitterly cold. And most everything had frozen up. And we found a big group of ducks working in the middle of a cornfield, standing corn. And there was so much water that the farmers couldn't get the crop out.
Yep, I remember that.
So we got permission. We walked in, and there was sheet ice through the corn rows. As we're going in there, we spook up a bunch of birds, and we're in kind of waders and stuff and standing in water, and we threw out our decoys and they started kind of coming back in. So out from the corn, in the middle of the cornfield, was a open pothole that normally wouldn't be there, but it was full
flooded
of water.
Out area. Yeah. Yep.
And so Hank is standing in water with me sitting, and we're shooting ducks, and Hank would go make a retrieve, and he'd have to get up on an ice slab. He'd launch himself into the water, go get the bird, and then my friend had made an area where he could just swim into the cornrows and give me the bird, but he wouldn't do that. He'd pull himself back up on the slab and come to me that way. And Travis, I'm not kidding you. I think he made about a dozen to 15 retrieves like that, and I'll just never forget that one of my friends turned and looked at me and goes, "That's pretty cool."
Yeah.
"That's pretty cool." And he was shot that night too. I finally saw Hank get tired, cold water and up and down an ice slab. But it looked like he was dock jumping every time he would go get a bird. That was pretty funny.
God, they have to be thinking, when you're watching it and you're inside, you're going, "Hell yeah."
Yeah.
They're doing the same thing out there. Hell yeah. They're just jumping off of that sheet of ice and coming back.
And it's like a story you might read in a DU magazine or something like that, But anyways, I had one more memory that I just can't
leave
in mind.
I love it. Hope you keep bringing up those memories and keep enjoying them. Thank you for... this was not a conversation you wanted to have today, and you said no the first time I asked, and then I asked you again, you said okay. So I appreciate it, and I know that our listeners can relate and are
I do have one more piece of advice, actually, too. If you can do this, and this has always been my plan, and it went awry this time, but have another dog. When you're when your main hunting dog gets to be four or five, bring another dog into your pack, and you've got both a hunting buddy, another hunting buddy. You have an older dog that helps you train the younger dog, and God forbid something like this happens, you have a safety net, you know, to help your sadness, your feelings, and something else to focus on. And we have that with Millie. And to remind people, Millie is Hank's daughter. I think she's showing signs of being a good hunting dog, but she's only 17 weeks old. We'll find out.
Yeah. What are you most excited about for this fall, hunting with Millie?
I'm probably not taking her into Milo.
Are you going to have a camera log on Millie's first hunt?
We'll have a camera. Well, Millie's going to go with me wherever we film. So I don't know where that first hunt will be. I did get her on some live birds this weekend. I don't know if I told you that. She and her brother were out there, and they showed all the instincts. At first, it was pretty funny. A lot of barking going on at those critters in the grass.
Sure.
And then a little mouthing, and then eventually we picked them up. And then after a few times, you see the tail going. So it was pretty cool. So I don't know what will be her first hunt. In September, she will be a little over 6 months. I'll probably wait till sometime in October. Never know. I had Hank out when he was 6 months, and my other dog too, Gus, when he was 6 months. So she'll hunt somewhere. We're not sure where yet.
Yeah, I think she's got a bright future ahead of her. Well, you can watch my dog's first hunt. Like I told you, that one's coming up in a few days on the Flush television show. All new episodes are airing right now on the Outdoor Channel. You can watch the show Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and of course you can DVR them. You can learn more about the television show and when they air by going to our website, theflush.tv. Please, once again, send us stories of your bird dogs that you've loved and lost. We're going to start reading them one a week moving forward now. Once again, Scott, thank you for taking the time today to share your story with us. And we're heartbroken with you and your family.
And I just want to say again, a heartfelt thank you to our viewers, our Facebook friends, our Instagram friends, and the listeners of this podcast for your kind and thoughtful messages. All the Fransons truly, truly appreciated it. And maybe stay tuned for an idea to celebrate hunting dogs in person sometime this fall. We're working on some ideas.
That's in the works.
Yeah, we're working on some ideas, right, Trav?
Stay tuned. Yeah, stay tuned. Yeah, there's always something going on in your brain. Something.
The light bulb has clicked. It's flickering, I guess.
I wouldn't say it's always flickering. It's not bright. It's there. It's sort of there.
It's a dull shade of yellow.
It's not one of those new lithiums.
It's not a fluorescent ball, no.
Once again, thank you to our sponsors, Federal Premium Ammunition, Onyx Hunt, North Dakota Tourism, Chief Upland, and Huron South Dakota for helping us to make this show possible. Like I said, if you need a bird hunting fix, you can watch all of our episodes now airing on the Outdoor Channel or go to our YouTube page to watch all of our past episodes in their entirety. Once again, send us your ideas for this show, your stories. You can reach us on Facebook and Instagram at The Flush TV or on our website at theflush.tv. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.